This is one in a series of podcasts from Lutheran Education Australia, My Principals Who Serve in Lutheran Education.
Hello and welcome to Angela Branford. Angela is principal at Calvary Lutheran Primary School and has served there for the past 9 years. She has been working in the Lutheran education system since 1995 and has held teaching and leadership positions at Lutheran schools and colleges in the Northern Territory, Western Australia and South Australia. She has a Bachelor of Education, Junior Primary, Graduate Diploma in Theology and a Master of Education Administration. Angela has a strong commitment to developing learning communities that focus on student agency and for working closely with school communities, supporting authentic lifelong connections. The focus for this podcast is leading learning and teaching, and in particular, the ways in which Angela and her staff at Calvary have developed a comprehensive approach to collaborative professional learning. Welcome, Angela.
Thanks, Di. Great to be here.
Thank you. Angela, looking at what you have implemented at Calvary, this is certainly a comprehensive program. Where did you start?
Yes, so Calvary was invited to be part of an AISA, Association of Independent Schools, I guess a learning lab kind of arrangement back in 2014-15 called IDEAS, which was looking at the development of a school-wide approach to pedagogy. And it was based on Frank Crowther's work, and I'm a big fan of Frank's work. So we jumped on board with that. I'd very early started in my role as principal around that time here at Calvary, and they had had a very long-serving principal previously for over 25 years. So it was time to look at an overall change of culture. And so we wanted to have a really strong, clear framework for what that would look like and the why, I guess, of why we were going to change things and why I would ask staff who had been working together, some of them, this is their only school, so they've given 30 years of service, why I would ask them to change a pattern of behaviour or expectation that from their perspective was effective, which if you looked at NAPLAN data, it was. But part of the IDEAS program was to do the DISA or DISA, or the inventory of satisfaction survey, and we did that across staff, students, parents. And for me, the student data and the student response to that was possibly the most impactful thing, in that when I asked the students to give feedback about what they wanted and their student voice, they all asked me what I wanted them to write. And I was, it took me a long time to convince them that I actually wanted to hear what they had to say. And so from there, it was about looking at who is the learning for and what is the role of the educator in that, rather than working in isolation, imparting knowledge and hoping that it sticks. So, and certainly that's not a criticism of the staff that were here at the time or the work and the learning that had been done previously. It was really about student voice right from the very beginning. I'd come from a school that was very focused on student voice and collaborative culture, and I knew the impact that that had on students and their own abilities as learners. The other thing too, that when I first got here, there was a very strong perception of students that they could only be limited, or that they were limited in their choices because of where they lived, and that there was this belief that because they lived down south at Hackham or Christie's or wherever, that they only had a benchmark that was reasonably low, based on a whole range of cultural influences and socioeconomic influences. And it was really palpable I'd come from another suburb in Adelaide that wasn't particularly affluent, and it was evident there as well, but not to the same degree that it was here. And so when the Ideas program came about and we were offered a space in that, I thought this is the start of really looking at what is the culture at Calvary and what do we want for our young people in this community, where they are marginalised and there is some hard stuff that they face. How do we as the adults, the wiser, bigger, wiser, stronger people, how do we support them to, you know, to be the best version of themselves that they can be? So that's really where that came from. And the only way that we can do that is to upskill ourselves, and so that we're not only growing our own capacity, but we're modelling to our students the rigour of learning and the challenge and the uncomfortableness of having to do something new, because that's what we were going to ask them to do.
Angela, you mentioned Frank Crowther's work, that you're a big fan of that. For those who don't know, could you just briefly summarise what you think the key points are that you've taken on board with this project?
Yeah, so Frank, the things with Frank's work that really, it's not very complicated from my perspective, are the notion of school-wide pedagogy. So it shouldn't be hard for children to move from one year level to the next, from one teacher to the next. And our experience was that we felt that our students were going from one island to another and they needed a different passport and a different language. And that was no reflection on the teachers. It's just that the school was small, there was limited resources, so they taught really well but in isolation from each other. And so Frank's work is all about a school-wide pedagogy. But Frank's makes a comment something like, teachers are the sleeping giants of schools. And so it really struck a chord with me that we have these remarkably gifted, passionate human beings, and a lot of the time they stay in their four walls and don't necessarily communicate with each other. And I came into a school with a staff that had been long-serving, who had, in essence, grown up together and seen their children married. And, you know, they were like a big family who sat at the big table and had, you know, Christmas dinner every day in the staff room. And I thought, you know, if they can be this connected about their own lives, surely we can be this connected about the lives of the students in our school. And it's not to say that they weren't, and that their conversations weren't driven around students. It's that there wasn't an obvious connection between practice and purpose and then outcome. So Frank's work is about bringing that disconnection into a connected, collaborative, school-wide approach to learning and teaching.
Okay, it's good to hear how he's gone about that. So what are some of the key components of your approach?
So we started looking at who we were and why we were interested in what we were doing. So because I was the new kid on the block, I needed to find out. And a very wise colleague of mine who I had served with as he was a principal, I said to him, what should I do when I get there? They've had one principal, essentially, and they've all been together almost longer than I've been alive. And he said, ask them why they do what they do. So I thought, oh, that's a pretty obvious question. So I did a walk around the school and I said, why is that there and why is that there? And for 80% of the questions, they said, oh, no, we've always, it's just there because it's always been there. So it was really clear that there was a need to unpack who we were as a school, and they were very willing participants initially, until it got to the rigour of actually having to do something. But and it was confronting, and I think, you know, it is hard. Change is not easy and it takes time. So we looked at that idea of who are we and why do we do what we do and what do we want for our learners when they leave us? What is it that we want? And that's really came out of that Ideas program. And then we wanted to look at a motto for our school for learning. Not one of our, you know, we had a motto for the school, which was quite, I have to be careful. It was written in a bit of a deficit, I felt. It was a bit of deficit thinking, and it was where neither values nor education are compromised. And I thought, well, I feel like I'm apologising with that. And, you know, and so we looked at, you know, what is it that we want for our children? We want them to be aspirational, and we want them to take risks, and we want them to be the very best version of themselves in whatever it is that they end up doing. And so we tried to develop a motto that would then drive our thinking, I guess. And we had all sorts. We had, you know, have a crack and all this sort of gear. And then we played around with, you know, lovely iteration of words and how many words can we get to rhyme that would mean things, you know, connection, collaboration, Christ-centered, la, la, la. And it took 3 years, and we hung around in this space for 3 years just trying to find the right language to capture this huge idea that we had about, you know, creating a culture where it was very driven by students and that they were very personally engaged in their learning. So it wasn't actually until we then engaged in another learning opportunity 3.5 years later from starting the ideas, we did some work with AESA on cultures of thinking and looking at Ron Richard's work. And by then we had a little bit of a leadership team, I guess, a few extra people besides me. And we looked at, well, we undertook that project alongside the ideas one. And it was out of that we really refined our motto. And once we refined our motto, then we felt we had a really clear pathway for how we wanted to develop. So our motto is reach for success. And I guess that captures that have a go, sort of have a crack mentality. And it was also about seeing beyond your postcode as well. So helping children to see that they were more than the suburb that they lived in, and they were more than the perception of other people. You know, I say to the kids all the time, you know, we've got a $1 million view from our oval. You can see the beach, and people pay millions and we get there every day. And so trying to shift that thinking pattern about that. So our motto is broken into 5 parts: relationships, engagement, achievement, Christ-centered, and holistic. And we've unpacked each one of those with our students, and then our learner's map and learner's profile becomes, that's their grounding point, and they set their learning goals based on that. So it really, the Frank Crowther stuff at Ideas and the cultures of thinking led us to a motto that then helped us to look at, well, how do we support staff to grow to be part of that thinking as well? So if we were going to ask our students to challenge themselves and take risks, it was important for me that our staff understood what that felt like, because we can get a little bit comfortable and say, oh, I don't want to do that because, you know, I don't feel confident or I feel uncomfortable. And yet we ask our learners to do that every second of every day. So we really needed to be authentic in the journey that we were asking them to take by doing it ourselves. So that was the driver. And then we looked at, previously, the staff had not done a great deal of professional development here, and it was really a numbers thing. There was no money, essentially. Small school in suburbs that are quite low in socioeconomic capacity, and so, you know, it was really keep the building standing and the school running. And so with school council's permission, we made a commitment to really investing in staff, and that we changed the landscape with that and said you can pretty much do whatever PD you want to do, but you have to take another colleague with you, and ultimately you have to come back and you have to share your learning and how it reflects with the vision or the motto of the school. So that was a bit exciting for staff who hadn't done anything other than the Australian curriculum PD, and they were quite nervous about it because they hadn't gone out of the school for a lot of years because just hadn't been opportunity to do that. So for them it was quite challenging to go and sit with professional peers from outside of their school and hear all of that, which was actually the purpose, is to cross-pollinate with current thinking and to see that the things that they were being challenged by and with were the same as, you know, other teachers in other schools, whether they're Lutheran or not. So then we were a bit PD happy for a while. I was, oh, yeah, that looks great. Go and do that. Oh, yeah, that looks fantastic. Oh, look at that. That's great. We did a lot of that and really still weren't, I wasn't thinking that we were seeing some translation of that into practice. It was, yeah, I'm just going to go out and get as much information as I can. And about that time we developed what we call our learning and teaching team, which in a lot of schools would be called the leadership team. But we wanted a very distributed leadership model, or well, certainly I did, and I'd worked in schools where there was a strong distributed leadership and the empowerment that came from that when you view everyone as a leader. And also I had been part of the development team for Growing Deep. And so in my head, I had this, everyone's a leader, you know, and Growing Deep is very big on growing leadership from whatever role or responsibility you have in a school. And so that was in one part of my brain. And then I've got Frank Crowther saying teachers are the sleeping giants. And then I've got Sir Ken Richards saying creativity is the key. And so I'm thinking, how do we bring all of this together? And so then it seemed to get a bit muddy there in about 2015. I was like, ooh, and everyone's, what is happening? And we had a really big explosion of children. So we doubled in size in that time, which meant we had went from having staff who had been together for 20 years to having double the size of staff with people they didn't know who I had been very careful about employing and very specific around people who had come from a collaborative culture, who had done team planning, who had particular expertise in the areas we were looking to grow. And so it actually got a bit tricky there in the middle, and staff, some of the long-serving staff became quite unsettled. And I would say that there were a couple who were quite disgruntled about the direction that I was pursuing and that I wouldn't just make a decision and tell them what to do. And I was very committed to not doing that because I had learned from previous leadership experiences that if I impose something, it's not actually beneficial for the children because it's going to go if I go. And so I was very committed to walking this journey. And from my perspective, it wasn't about everyone doing what I thought. It was about, this is the outcome that we want. We want a school-wide pedagogy, we want a collaborative culture, and we want a student voice that's really strong around their learning. And everyone subscribed to that. Everyone was really passionate and committed about that. So for me, it was about, well, if you want to go on the bus and you want to walk and you want to go in a boat, that's fine, but we all need to be at this point and heading towards this place. So I had to do some changing as well and model that, I guess, that rigor that goes with that, so that it made it okay for staff to do. So there were some things that, you know, I really wanted to be a THRAS school because I really wanted to be. And we ended up not being a THRAS school because I had to model the philosophy that I wanted with staff, which was, if it gets us where we are going and it's good for students, then it shouldn't matter whether it's THRAS or Jolly Phonics or whatever it is. And it ended up being Jolly Phonics, and that's fine, and it was part of our journey because it got us to a school-wide approach to the teaching of literacy, and that was the key. So it was about being clear about what our end point was and then working with staff at an individual and whole level to make sure that we were all heading towards that in one way or another. And then our leadership team, because we grew, we were in a position to be able to have that shared leadership. And that's really when we got some traction around the professional development approach that we take. So the leadership team, there were four of us at that time. So myself as principal, we had a wellbeing coordinator. We had a learning and teaching coordinator who's also the deputy, and we had a curriculum coordinator who was also a numeracy coordinator as well, because we were still part of that. There were those key teacher roles through AESA, and you got funded for... So we went and did a coaching course with Encounter Lutheran. So we partnered with them because they were looking at coaching as well. So we all went and did the Coaching International 4-day accreditation and came back and started using that model of helping people to find their own pathway and journey in terms of their own growth. And we focused that on their professional growth. So that was our role in having those courageous conversations around, you know, who are you as an educator and where are your strengths and where are your areas for growth and what are you going to do about it? We'll facilitate that by providing the resourcing, but you've got to come to the understanding of who you are and what's important for your learners, not what makes you feel comfortable. And just because you've done it for 20 years doesn't mean, and it's worked, doesn't mean that it's going to be effective for this next cohort of children. Even though you might have taught them 3 years ago, they're not the same learners anymore. So from that, we grew an actual learning and teaching coach role. And that's really, for our setting, has been the real bringing together of this whole concept of co-constructing learning in our school. So our learning and teaching coach, she's 3 days a week. She's also the curriculum coordinator. She's amazing. And she essentially brings this all together by meeting with staff around their professional learning plans, which are aligned to ATSL framework, Growing Deep, and our school's learners map, which is based around our motto of Reach for Success. So those three things are embedded in teachers' professional learning plans, and they develop long-term professional learning goals based on the ATSL reflection tool, the Growing Deep core propositions, and then how are they developing themselves in relationships, engagement, achievement, Christ-centeredness, and how are they being holistic. And so we've got a learner's map for children and a learner's map for teachers, because we can't ask children to be engaged if teachers aren't preparing engaging experiences. We can't ask students to have healthy relationships if teachers aren't doing that with students. So there's this expectation that we're all working in the same place. And then that goes right back to Frank's work around school-wide pedagogy and that whole notion of having a culture that speaks the same language and operates under the same framework.
So, Angela, you were talking about having this team of coaches who was your leadership team who all undertook the course.
Yeah.
And you as principal undertook that course as well, is that right?
Correct. So all of the professional learning that we do as a whole school, the whole learning and teaching team does. So when the learning and teaching team, when we did ideas, or we didn't have a learning and teaching team then, but I asked staff to join me. For all of those key components, we've done that. I've made that a priority because I believe that if I'm going to ask staff to challenge themselves or change their thinking or engage in a new culture of change or operation, then I need to know what that's like. I need to be able to speak that with clarity and experience. So all of the things leading up to where we are now, I have done the PD. I've engaged in that. I've got a professional learning plan. I meet with the learning and teaching coach. I do all of the same things because it's otherwise it's just talk. If I'm not walking the walk as well, I go to all the professional learning that the staff do as a whole school. Sometimes I'm not able to go to all of them, but I'm there for at least part of it. So we did circle of security training with our staff and I went to all of those things. I mean, it's only an advantage to me because I'm more equipped, but at the same time, it shows that it's important and valued and you know, it's going to be who we are as a school. So, yes, so I did that coaching and we used that, I guess, that framework of thinking. I use that with staff and students, and but Renee, our learning and teaching coach, that's her real bread and butter. She's very gifted at it, and so she—that's her primary function—is to support teachers to take those risks with their practice, to transfer that professional learning experience into practice. She observes them in their classrooms, so they set goals with her and she will do observations and give feedback. They meet with her regularly. Some of it is scheduled and some of it is just on a needs basis. She sets their learning goals with them in their professional learning plans, and then she follows through that journey with them. And provides them with readings and journaling experiences and professional learning opportunities. And I think that that's what's shifted the landscape, is that there's somebody who's actually in that journey with all of our staff. And we're fortunate we don't have a huge staff. And so it's quite personal, and she's very aware of who's doing what, and is very good at holding us to account, me included. You know, she asked me, I was going to do something around parent partnerships and COVID hit, and I thought, oh, beauty, I'm out. I don't have to do that now, you know, and straight in. So how have you shifted your thinking around that, Angela, in terms of if one of your goals was to spend time, you know, seeking feedback from parents and you were going to do that over morning teas and things like that, what are you going to do now? And I'm like, gee, okay. So, yes, so she's very focused and very passionate about growing capacity in our teachers and staff. Oh, that's the other thing. All of our support staff, LSOs, all of our LSOs, and there's five of them, are all in-class LSOs, so we don't do any, they don't do any photocopying or laminating or anything like that. And that's a personal preference from me, saying that, you know, if we're going to provide this support, they're not doing busy work, they're working with students. And they undergo all of the professional learning that our teachers do. So they're part of every whole school learning. So they've done Circle of Security, they've done the 7 steps of writing, they've done assessment for learning, they've done the restorative justice stuff. Everything that we do that we anticipate is going to be a whole school approach or a whole school understanding. Our LSOs do it as well.
So you've been quite strategic in the way that you've actually developed your learning and teaching program to incorporate all of the staff in the school.
Yeah. So, and that's really part of that. For me, that was my take on Frank's work, is that, you know, if you're going to have a school-wide pedagogy and you're going to have a school-wide culture around learning and teaching, you can't leave part of your learning and teaching team out to the side. And in our case, our learning, our LSOs, they probably work with some of the most vulnerable children in our school. You know, LSOs are given the tricky kids. And so why wouldn't we upskill them with the very best resources that they've got? Because the kids that they're with are most likely the most vulnerable of not succeeding, which is why they're having intervention. And we would send them in there with half of the information. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. So at the moment, our literacy, we're looking at multisensory literacy, a speech to print model. And so our LSOs are currently undertaking professional learning for MSL, because they're going to be working in foundation in year one. And so that's where they need the information, because there is quite specific strategies and expectations within that, and they're in there all day till lunch. Well, they're going to have to help with literacy, but if they don't have the toolbox to do that, then we're actually failing our students. So we're very, very specific that anyone that has anything to do with learning, which essentially is everybody, needs to have the skill set or the toolbox to do that.
This hasn't been an overnight journey by any means, has it?
No. So I've been here for 9 years. This is my 9th year. And so I 8 years ago, we started this journey with ideas, I think. And it has taken a long time to get to the point where we are now. And I would say it's probably been the last 2.5 years where I felt, oh, I think it was probably 2017. And I remember saying to the learning and teaching team, I actually feel like I could go on leave and come back and it would still be how we want it to be. And that sounds really arrogant when I hear it out loud. My point with that is that there was really strong evidence that our teaching teams were working in teams and that our staff were using language and holding each other to account around old thinking, the current reality and the preferred reality, and that they were shifting out of that. Well, we used to be like that and we used to do that, but that's not who we are anymore. So now we need to be, but, you know, don't go back there. Don't fall into that old thinking model, you know, because you're under pressure. Let me help you stay in this new reality. And that's really empowering when you hear that as a principal and you go, my work is done. I can, you know, I don't have to nurse that quite so intimately. And so it was in 2017, I remember saying to myself, I need to let them now do what they need to do with it. And I'm a control freak, so that was really difficult. I had to, you know, to stop micromanaging because I was actually getting in their way. And I could see that they just needed to flourish. They needed to have a go at being in this new reality and give them permission to run with it. And it's really powerful when you hear that not pushback, but that challenging from within your own professional peers. Like, it's not me saying, oh, hang on a minute, remember, we don't do that, we don't do black line, you know, whatever. I don't even have to, I don't worry about it because they do that with each other. And then now, so what are we, 2020? Last year, 2019, was probably the first year that I thought, I think our kids get it. I think our kids get that they're actually drivers in this. And it was actually at a principal's day here at school. We had the end of year thing here last year, and some of our students took principals on a tour because that's what we do. And I had some students come back to me saying, you know, principals aren't very good listeners, Mrs. Bramford. And I went, generally not, no. And I said, what makes you say that? And they said, oh, well, we were going on a tour and we gave some instructions and they just went and did their own thing. And this kid said to me, I said under my breath to my mate, they're not very good at reaching for success, are they? They're not very good at being collaborative or, you know, instruction followers or question askers. And I thought, oh, my goodness, we've hit the peak and, you know, here are my children, well, not my children, but here are these Calvary students in year 5 and 6 who, because the school leaders were away that day, had to step up and do these. And I said to them, you know, it'd be really good if you talked about reach for success because Mrs. Werner would be really happy. And so they went, right, we're on it, you know. And I had principals coming back saying, oh, my goodness, these kids know, you know, their learner's profile backwards and forwards and they can demonstrate and articulate. And I thought, you know, that's really what I wanted for these kids when I came back, when I first got here and they said, what do you want me to write in a survey about their satisfaction at school? So it's much bigger than that, but that's really the driver for why we focused on professional learning, because if we haven't got a skill set as educators and we're of the assumption or belief that we're going to change the world for these young people, if we're not walking the walk and talking the talk, then why would we anticipate that they would do that themselves? So it has taken a long time.
It's really interesting to hear how you have embedded that school culture of learning, not just amongst the staff, but amongst the students as well. Now, you did say that you could walk out now and feel comfortable that this could continue. You've still identified new directions to go into, haven't you? What sort of new directions are you looking at?
So out of our professional learning plan, and because we track the, well, I don't, the learning and teaching coach does. She tracks what trends come up across the staff and the LSOs. And so in the last 2 years, 2.5 years, this notion of student agency keeps coming up. And whilst we're very big on student voice and we thought we were operating in a space of student agency, in consultation with Linda Seacombe, who is the senior educational consultant at AESA and happens to be my principal's mentor, we were talking with her about this notion of student voice and how do we know that we're being authentic, and is it that the kids are just telling us what we want them to say and they think we want them to say? Are they actually driving their own learning? Are they, you know, there was all of these why questions and what if and how do we measure? And so this was coming up in professional learning plans. Teachers were wanting to know about, you know, is there professional learning around how do I create a student voice in my classroom outside of a class meeting or SRC or, you know, that old good stuff. But it just seemed to be a bit surface area, you know, like just something we did to kids rather than grew from students. So Linda said, oh, well, Charles Ledbetter's doing a 3-year learning agency lab kind of thing, looking at student agency, and would you like to be part of that? We said, yes, please. So we're into our second year with Charles looking at student agency, and we have a project. We have and our project is around metacognition, and the metacognition for students as learners. So it's about teaching children the metacognition skills that they need to be able to think about thinking and learning. We say we want you to have agency, but they don't know how to do that, and they don't know what it is, and they don't know how to think about it. So that metacognitive stuff where we want them to know the skills, you know, there's a certain practice and craft to thinking about thinking, and we want them to have that skill set so then they can drive that themselves. And that's a really poor description of our our goal. But so now we're in this phase where it's taken us 2 years to come up with what do we want? You know, what is our goal around student agency? And we started off with all of this really fancy stuff about students planning their own curriculum, and, you know, we wanted to be like these other schools in New Zealand where, you know, they go surfing for one day a week because that's a passion project, and we live near the beach and we should go surfing, and, you know, we could go orienteering because there's cliffs. And we thought, hang on a minute, that's all product-based, and that's all, you know, we're starting at the wrong end. And so we went back to the why are we doing this? Why do we want this for students? And it came back to that metacognition and that whole notion of how do we teach kids to think about learning and to learn about learning. So that's 2 years into this project, and we're still not really clear what our goal is. We are in the pit, as you call it, in the cycle. So we thought we were at the peak, and now we're in the pit. So that's one thing that's come out of the professional learning journey, is that teachers are wanting some more rigorous learning around how they support students to think about learning and agency. And then what's also come out is once you give kids a voice, well, not that I'm gifting it to them, but when they become familiar and comfortable in a place where their voice matters, you actually start to hear stuff that you might not want to hear about your practice or about your role as principal or as a classroom teacher. So we had one, when we first started asking students for feedback, we had a teacher, who very experienced teacher, fantastic teacher, and I challenged all of the staff to choose some lessons where at the end of it they would ask for specific feedback about their pedagogy from their students. She was like, I'm going to ace this. This is brilliant. They love me. I'm great. So she did this thing, and she was so proud because she had this beautiful visual presentation, and she'd layered slides, and, you know, it was back in the day of data projectors and what are they called? Interactive whiteboards. She had this, and she was so proud of herself. And she came back in after the lesson, and I said, "How did that go?" And she said, "It was horrific." I said, "Why?" And she said, "I thought I was doing so well, and I was so proud of myself, and I was going on, and the kids were engaged, and la la la." And then I said at the end of the lesson, "So, anyone like to give me any feedback about my quality of teaching, or, you know, their engagement with the lesson?" And she thought, "Oh, just really, this is going to be great, you know, and Angela's going to love hearing about this." And one of her students told her it was singularly the most boring lesson she'd ever had in her entire life.
Oh, no.
So that became a standing joke. So we were starting to then hear from students not just about their learning but about what was stopping them from learning, because we'd started to give them vocab around learning and the metacognition of learning. Then we were asking them what helps them with their learning and what doesn't help them with their learning, and then we started to get a whole lot of social complications for them. They had built up enough trust, and we have a restorative justice philosophy here at school, and I think a lot of our older, well, not just older, but a lot of our students knew that, you know, we had a bit of a stable staff and that the principal was not going anywhere. So there was a bit of stability around that. And so we started to hear some stuff. We'd already been hearing it, but we really started to hear it. So then we hit COVID last, oh no, that's this year, isn't it? COVID. And we started. This year,
yes.
So, and it really just escalated. It was already something in our school community. Trauma is huge here for whatever reason. And there are lots, and a lot of them are around marginalisation, addiction and poverty. And that doesn't necessarily sound right. We're a fee-paying Lutheran school. We're not a very expensive fee-paying Lutheran school. And we are quite well funded by the government because of where our school is located, and so we do have a really diverse community, like all schools, and we have a significant number of children who are raising their parents who are dealing with violence, trauma, drug addiction, abuse. We had a 10-year-old who was the legal carer for her mother. I was just flipping that. So we had a particular incident last year where a very young student's father passed away, and this particular student really unraveled. And we hadn't, in my time as principal, hadn't had to navigate our way through something like that, that was so raw for such a young student. And I know lots of principals and leaders and staff have had to do that, but we had been fairly blessed in that we hadn't had to do that in the last since I'd been here. So it really showed a gap for us as a staff around our knowledge of the significant impact of trauma. And so we started to look at what would we be doing if we are a school that focuses on forgiveness and restoration, and we know that we're in a community that struggles from time to time. How are we equipping staff and students to deal with the day-to-day traumas or, you know, stressors of life, and then significant issues? And we just felt that we weren't really equipped. We were very good and we could do lots of things and we were very nice at comforting, but in terms of actually supporting this young person and his mum through us, you know, we had our pastor and district office and there was all sorts. The day-to-day was really traumatic for this little person and still is, and we just felt really ill prepared for that. So we started to look at, you know, what is the makeup of our school and what are the professional learning? And a lot of staff had been doing the accidental counsellor and one-minute counselling, and we saw that there was a real trend from our staff to look for developing that skill set. So then this year COVID came along and we thought, jingoes, that's fun, and that's code for far out. And we were a school, when we went into the initial phases in term two, we had 80% attendance throughout the whole year because significant number of our families fall into that vulnerable group. So we got 35 kids here today on the last day of lockdown. You know, and I know some schools have not been on site since Wednesday afternoon. So, and all of those children that are here are quite tricky in that it's safer to be here than it is anywhere else. So we thought, right, we really need to do something about this. And then we had, like I imagine lots of schools have had, a real shift in our parents' stability and relationships, and some of them were already doing it really tough, and then suddenly they had no house, they were sleeping in their car and no food and living, you know, from, yeah, one day to the next, and kids coming to school with nothing or the leftovers from the day before. And people find that out when I say that to people, they go, but you're a private school. I'm like, no, we're not. We're an independent school. But so I think there's this disconnect that community has, thinking, oh, they're paying fees to go to a school, but it doesn't, you know, it's a coffee a day to come to our school. So the leadership team, the learning and teaching team, have just completed the Berry Street trauma-informed practice, which is, I can't recommend highly enough. Again, it looks at a whole school approach to supporting students dealing with trauma, but it equips staff with, I guess, an approach that supports all students in your class. So not just identifying the kids who struggle, but setting up a culture that focuses on calm and self-reflection and an inner voice that can talk not just about learning but about their emotional, social well-being needs. So we are embarking on that as our whole school focus for next year, looking at establishing the trauma-informed practices embedded into our already learner's map around Reach for Success. So it'll just become another strand. So it's not extra, it's in the development of. So that's come out of that professional learning pathway and the coaching sessions that Ren has with staff. This keeps coming up, like, I've got this kid and I don't know how to, and we know that if children are thinking about what's going to happen when they get home, they're less likely to be thinking about handwriting or their inquiry project or, you know, how they're going to solve the world's problems and getting along with other people. And so school becomes just another place where they don't fit or don't connect or disengage. So
thank you. There's some remarkable insights there into embedding change and growth in your school, particularly in that learning and teaching area. So thank you very much for that. And for anyone listening to this podcast, I hope that they can find out a little bit more about your program in terms of working with teachers and the coaching program that you've initiated, because that's on the AITSL website. So would encourage them to have a look. I think you go under the Teach tab and look for Improving Teacher Professional Learning. And when you scroll down, there's a case study and that's you.
That's us, little old Calvary.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for that, Ange. Much appreciated. And we might hear more from you next year about the Berry Street program.
Love to. Thanks, Di.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out the LEA website, where you'll find more podcasts on a range of topics for anyone interested in leading in Lutheran education.